Gabe Amo made history when he won the Democratic primary in Rodin's first congressional district earlier this week. The Pawtucket native and former White House aide could become the first person of color to represent the state in Congress. First, Amo has to win the November election against Republican challenger Gary Leonard. But the first district is heavily Democratic, and Amo is considered likely to win. How did this son of immigrants from Liberia and Ghana overcome expectations to emerge as the new rising star in Rhode Island politics? And what can he accomplish if he does make it to Congress? I'm Ian Donis, and this week I'm going in-depth with the Democratic nominee in the 1st District, Gabe Amo. Welcome back to the Publix Radio, and congratulations on your victory this week.
It's great to be back, and thank you so much, Ian, for your note of congratulations, and I'm excited at the general election ahead.
After your win, you heard from your former boss, President Joe Biden. What did he tell you?
He, one, congratulated me, told me he appreciated the message of our campaign, positivity, talking about the investments of the Biden-Harris administration. And he also offered to be helpful as we work towards November 7th in the general election.
When the polls closed at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, did you think you were going to win?
I wasn't certain, but I felt good. I had great conversations at the polls throughout the day in towns like Barrington, in Bristol, in Providence, and Pawtucket, and people were overwhelmingly positive. And so, you know, for as much as that's worth, it gave me a bit of momentum, at least emotionally, as I walked into the brewery, the Guild, on Tuesday night.
You were not well known by rank and file voters across the 1st District when you announced your campaign in April. How do you explain how you won?
I think it's a combination of things. One, I think it's the consistency of message. On April 18th, when I entered this race, I talked about my Pawtucket roots. I talked about my hardworking parents that inspire me. I talked about the work that I had done for two presidents of the United States and a governor here in Rhode Island. And most importantly, I talked about the issues that are people across the state are confronting and why we need effective leadership from day one to address those challenges and best serve the district. And I think that was the first core piece of this. I also think our ground game, it wasn't talked about a lot, but we knocked on a lot of doors. We went to a lot of events. We texted. We called. We engaged people. We got proximate. And that matters in our politics. It matters in our elections. It matters in our government. And so I think that was a big part of it. And of course, we had TV ads, and ads matter. They matter because they both connect the message to the messenger and the recipients of that message. And the combination of those things yielded what I think is a very strong case for our candidacy and our campaign and the work ahead.
Heading into the primary on Tuesday, Aaron Regenberg was the perceived front runner. He ran more to the left of you. He received endorsements from Bernie Sanders and AOC. Do you think that kind of thing turned off voters?
Frankly, endorsements weren't the thing that I was pursuing at great length. I think ultimately it was the positive message that we put forward that I think appealed to a broader set of folks across the 1st Congressional District. So while endorsements are prized, for us, the only endorsement that really mattered was that of the voters across the 1st District, and I think they spoke resoundingly.
Let's switch gears and talk about some issues. We saw how the Sacklers were basically able to bend the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to their will when they were rolling out opioids. There are a lot of military defense boondoggles like the Littoral Combat Ship. Billions of dollars were squandered on that before the Navy canceled it, and there doesn't seem to be any accountability. The takeaway seems to be that the rich and corporations get to play by different rules than regular people. What can you do about that if you're elected to Congress?
Well, I think especially when it relates to federal funding, the oversight role that the federal government has is tremendous. And I think deploying a really active set of members on the right committees to make sure that we hold to account folks who are, you know, the recipients of our money through Medicare, folks who are the recipients of our taxpayer dollars through the defense budget, and holding people to account is a big part of the role. And I think when we saw Congressman Cicilline's leadership in that function as related to big tech. We have an example here in Rhode Island of someone who has gotten to work on those issues, and I hope to follow in his footsteps in that way.
In contrasting yourself from Aaron Regenberg on defense spending, you said you would not support a 10% cut. You said you would go after waste, fraud, and abuse, which is kind of a cliched thing that candidates always say, and it's so ambiguous as to be almost meaningless. How would you drill down on actually rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse in the defense budget?
Well, I think it's important to do your homework. I haven't been elected to this seat yet. We have an election in November. When if I am elected, I will work very hard with my colleagues, because the waste, fraud, and abuse is put out there because it's a real thing. It exists. And so we have to get to the bottom of what that is across the defense budget, but all over the federal government. We need accountability for the precious investments that we have from this federal government. And I look forward to that work.
Let's talk a little bit about your former boss, President Joe Biden. Recent polling shows that his support is eroding among Black, Latino, and other non-white voters compared to previous Democratic candidates pre-election. What's your explanation for that?
I think right now, particularly in this media environment, it's sometimes hard to break through. But the president has done historic things for communities of color, but for everybody. I mean, you look at the child tax credit, for example, that is now expired because of congressional inaction. That cut child poverty by 50%, the expanded credit, but cut Black child poverty by even more. That is something that we should be celebrating. So we've got a lot of work as Democrats and as people who want the president reelected to communicate the message, communicate the wins. We've got a bipartisan infrastructure law that is going to create so many jobs. We have the Inflation Reduction Act that is going to create so many jobs and also combat some of the challenges that we have with environmental justice. So the communities that are affected by this president's agenda need to hear, not just from the president, but people like me who are running for office. And if elected, I'm going to be an active surrogate to make sure that we continue the progress of this administration.
A lot of voters seem very ambivalent about a looming rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Are you worried about that as a Democrat, that Trump has a real potential shot at winning?
Of course. Donald Trump is the biggest threat to democracy that we faced. And it is not merely him as a person, but if you look at January 6th, if you look at some of our democratic norms eroding, that threat is something that I think we should be concerned about. I believe that President Biden deserves a second term based on the historic achievements of the first 2 years, but also because of some of the unfinished business that I, as a member of Congress, would hope to work on, whether it's federal investments in housing, whether it's taking care of the issues as it relates to our care economy, elder care, and child care. There is work left to do, and that's something that a Democrat in the White House, President Biden, will pursue, and that's not something that President Trump will. So for Rhode Islanders, they need a continuation of the progress of the Biden-Harris administration.
As you said earlier, you still face a November election against Republican opponent Gary Leonard. But I imagine you have thought in your mind, you know, if you're elected to Congress, if Donald Trump wins, it could be quite hairy. How, if you do wind up in Congress, how do you view your obligation as an individual and hypothetically as a member of the legislative body known as Congress if Donald Trump becomes president and starts undoing various prosecutions against him and so forth?
Look, I think it's two lanes. I think there's the national lane, which is a vigorous defense of some of the historic investments of the Biden-Harris agenda. That's like the Inflation Reduction Act, that on one side is doing so much to combat climate change, but then doing a historic thing like negotiating the prices of pharmaceutical drugs for the first time in our nation's history through Medicare. Then the local lane that is focused on getting as many resources back home to Rhode Island to deal with the critical issues of coastal resilience, investing in our blue economy, and so much more. But I'm very hopeful that there will be a second term of President Biden, and I'm not operating from a position of fear. I have great hope, and we're going to turn that hope into action to reelect President Biden.
Your Republican opponent, Gary Leonard, will probably argue that Rhode Island would be better served by having some ideological diversity in the state's congressional delegation, including a Republican member if Republicans hold the House. And so how would you respond to that?
I think if you look at my performance the other night, I had support from Democrats, from folks who were unaffiliated. I was successful in 16 of the 19 cities and towns across the district. I feel that more so than you know, my general election opponent, that I am reflective of the hopes and priorities of people across this district. And I will spend the next several weeks making that case to people in every venue possible.
Do we need more urgency in responding to the challenge of climate change? And if you land in Congress, how would you go about doing that?
Yeah, there is most certainly a climate crisis. We saw extreme temperatures this summer. We see the intensity of storms. We also are dealing with so many issues as it relates to our public health because of climate change. So I think we need to do so much. The first thing we need to do is invest the resources from the Inflation Reduction Act as rapidly as possible. That's the thing that we can do now, and make sure that there is no work done by Republicans to undo that progress. That's mission number one, and that's what I'll focus on when I get to Congress.
You cut your teeth on the campaign staff of Sheldon Whitehouse when he first ran for the Senate in 2006. You've been a staffer. This was your first run for office. Did you always envision that you would one day be a candidate?
I think sometimes you gotta, you know, look for your pitch, right? And I swung at this one because I truly believe that Rhode Islanders deserve a congressperson who can hit the ground running and be effective from day one because they have the experience to do so. You know, I've been a staffer, but when you are a staffer, you help execute when an elected official visions. There's a lot of us, and we get a lot done. And now, as a potential next congressperson from this district, I look forward to using that skill set to help folks.
When did the idea of running for office first come to you?
I think it's come in waves over my life. But for me, it's always been about impact. And I look for moments where I can make an impact. And this was one. When Congressman Cicilline made his announcement in February, I thought it was a great time for me to get in.
Democratic nominee in Rhode Island's 1st Congressional District, Gabe Amo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ian.
The mayor of Providence, Brett Smiley, wrote a new chapter this week in the city's relationship with nonprofit universities and healthcare entities. Smiley announced a proposed agreement in which those institutions will pay more money, payment in lieu of taxes, or pilot, for property they own in the capital city. A few administrations ago, it made national headlines when then-Mayor Angel Taveras pushed for more money from the big local nonprofits. Now, the idea that the entities should pay more for what some call their fair share makes fewer waves. But Providence has been hard up for revenue for years, and that's not about to change anytime soon. And the city's underfunded pension consumes more money each year with no solution in sight. You can read more about that in my Friday TGIF column, posting around 4 this afternoon on what used to be known as Twitter, at Ian Don, and at thepublicsradio.org. That's our show for this week. Our producer is James Baumgartner. Thanks for additional help to Mareva Lindo and Alex Nunes. I'm Ian Donis, and I'll see you on the radio.